Levi Yitzchak Ben Reza.
Okay, and he got stabbed in 770 last night. And they just weren't even being merited.
I was just shown by Itchy a piece in the Zohar Chadash. It was reported, brought out in the name of Rav Fish, who writes on Yuan Nen Yaakov. But it brings Zohar Chadash. It's on Parshat Balak, Daf Nun Vav, if you want to check it. So it says over there, amongst other things, that in a Beit Knesset, in a shul in the south, 5 will be killed. And 32 days later, the wars will start, and Moshiach, for 12 months, and then Moshiach will come. 32 days later, after 5 were killed in the Beit Knesset in south of Israel and Jerusalem. It's exactly Shabbat Hanukkah. So, it's an interesting possibility. Keep your eyes peeled.
Say again. Who said what?
In the Zohar Chadash,
yeah.
Parshat Balak, Daf Nun Vav. You remember it, yeah? That one? Says over there that 70 days, he brings it says 70 days after Shavuot.
After?
Shavuot.
Shavuot, okay.
It wasn't 70 days after Shavuot Davka, but it says 70 twice. So you can, if you do the math, it works out that it 70 plus 70 plus 32 comes out, he does the math on to the first of Sivan. It's not exactly Shavuot, but it's
first up,
Sivan.
Sivan, yeah.
So it's close enough to Shavuot. But it says 5 will be killed. 5 tzaddikim will be killed.
Mm-hmm.
In a Beit Knesset in the south.
In the south. Okay.
It says 32 days after that, there will be great upheaval in the world, which will there'll be a lot of wars
in tumult,
yeah. For 12 months, after which Edom will come and try and take over Eretz Israel, etc.
So
and Moshiach will then will be revealed. I can't remember the exact order of it. Anyway, so it says 32 days after the 5 are killed in the Beit Knesset. So that's Shabbat Hanukkah.
Really?
Doesn't work.
Why? What's the English say?
No, it's 70 plus 70. It's not 70, it's of what? No, 32 days after the killing, after the massacre.
Okay.
That's Shabbat now.
Shabbat's Hanukkah.
This year, as in about 10 days' time.
What link was that?
It's on UNN Yaakov. You know that blog?
Right.
So he brings there Rav Fish.
The most current post?
Don't know.
Okay.
It's fairly recent.
Yeah, so I'll check.
He brings down Rav Cook?
Rav Fish.
Fish.
Fish is a top. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you to, you know, if everything's going to kick off in 10 days' time, it's worth knowing.
Well, I was reading somewhere that every major Hagim, there'll be a war.
Oh, okay. So, could also be interesting.
Every major Hagim, there'll be a war.
Tom, let's continue with. So, let's continue with our learning of Gan HaShalom. Not Gan HaShalom. Gam Emunah. See, I love this chair.
We need
could
to.
Could be any of them, really, but they're all. They're
we
all
really beautiful. Do need to complete Gan HaShalom.
Yeah. Because that's a shame we'll get there. So today we're going to continue with Gan Emunah, the Garden of Faith. We're learning yesterday the most difficult trait that can destroy a person's life is
not patience.
It's a lack of patience. All of them can destroy anger, arrogance. They can all destroy a person's life. But the one he brings here is one that we wouldn't have suspected as being in the top 10 most wanted. What's that? It's the Mida of Nitzachon, the desire to win, to be right, to be correct. Why does this rob me of my life? Because it means I never change. I think I'm perfect. I think I'm always right. I will do everything to be right. And I don't change my opinion even in the face of truth. Right? The greatest casualty in the war of needs, in the war to win, is truth. Who cares about truth? I just want to win the argument. I'm not prepared to hear what the other person has to say. And we're learning, we have to know that we don't know. And that another person, who's the person who is wise? One who learns from everyone. From everyone. To learn from someone means to take new information that you didn't know before. I didn't know that. That's how I can learn. If I assume I know everything, then there's no learning to be had. If I think I'm a cup of water and it's already full, you can't add anything in. I know it all. I have to be prepared to drop my current knowledge and replace it with new knowledge, new improved version. And we do that all the time. But sometimes we actively avoid it and fight against it. Even when someone comes to us with good advice, we fight against it. Particularly we fight against it when we see or we feel that we're being criticized. But in the essence, what is criticism? Criticism is just a very bad way of telling me what needs to be changed. That's what criticism is. Someone comes along and says, you're doing something wrong. You're not acting in a nice way, right? It doesn't come out in those words. It comes out, you're an idiot, right? But they're indicating to me, in whatever way they're indicating, that something needs to change here, which is very helpful and very useful, right? Constructive advice is criticism. It's just given in a bad way. But if I can't accept constructive advice, so for sure I can't accept criticism, and I can't accept disgrace, someone shouting at me, being rude to me, even though within that is truth. In Torah 6, in the Likutei Moran, where Rabbi Nachman talks about teshuva, he says, "Ikar teshuva yishtok v'yidom." A person hears their disgrace, but he keeps quiet. He writes in there that it's not just to keep quiet, to say, all right, I'm not saying anything. You're shouting at me, you're telling me I've messed up, I've done something, right? Keep it, I don't mind. And wash it over me. Fine, whatever you just said, went in one ear out the other, doesn't bother me, carry on. See, I didn't move me. He's not talking about that. He's not talking about ignoring the rebuke. And that's why I'm quiet. I stay quiet because I ignore what you say. Yeah, whatever. I'm turning my back and ignoring. No, I'm listening. I'm looking for what's correct in what you said. Right? When my wife shouts at me and tells me whatever complaint it is, right? I need to look for the truth in what she said. For sure she's exaggerating. For sure she's just upset and she's blowing off steam. But nonetheless, there is truth in what she said. There is truth. Might be a small amount of truth. I might be able to argue against it completely. Say, what are you talking about? A wife says to her husband, you never buy me anything. You never buy me anything. Well, she's screaming, she's upset, she's crying. So a husband can just ignore that. Think, well, she's talking crazy, talking nonsense, right? Because it's obviously not true. He's obviously bought her loads of stuff in the last 27 years. They've been married, right? So her complaint that you never buy me anything. What's his point? His point is to see the truth in there. You're right, the overall picture doesn't sound like it's correct. And I can ignore it and discount it all. Or I can look for the truth within what she's saying. Only a person who is not suffering from this bad quality of Nitzachon can do that. Because if I'm suffering from Nitzachon and my wife comes and tells me, you never buy me anything. How can you treat me this way? And I can wipe the floor with her. What are you talking about? Of course I do. You don't know what you're talking about. I bought you this, I bought you that, right? Wonderful. I won that argument. Clean that one out. But I just lost everything. So apart from that, I destroyed my marriage by doing so, right? And also missing out on the fact that I can never get the hint. Because I can't hear that actually there is truth in what the other person is saying. Right? That's what it means to learn from everyone. I can learn from everyone, even if someone is, so to speak, much below me. Let's say I'm a Rebbe and I'm teaching Gemara to a 12-year-old. When the Mishnah says to learn from everyone, it means that the Rebbe also learns from the 12-year-old. Doesn't just, not everything, obviously, but within whatever the 12-year-old is telling, there's what's to learn. Because Hashem is sending me messages all the time. But not if I've got this trait of Nitzachon, then all I'm interested in is myself. I don't even hear the other person's argument. When he's talking to me, what's going on in my head is what I'm going to answer back. I've got a really good point, and as soon as you shut up speaking, I'm going to make it. I have no clue what you just said. Or I have enough clue what you just said in order to refute it, but I didn't really take it on board or process it. A person wants to change, and he needs to be able to hear the messages that Hashem is giving him. Which means I have to accept what another person is telling me. Which means that to get rid of my nitzachon, I need to drop my ego. My ego. I need to be right. It doesn't really matter how it got there. Right? We all have, all of these traits got there because Hashem put them in us. Right? And for some people, it's because that's the way they grew up. Their parents never listened to them, never accepted, took their opinion seriously, or whatever. And now I've got a real need to stand up for myself or whatever. It doesn't matter where it came from. Where it came from is just the way Hashem implanted it in me. Now I have that. Now it's what I need to deal with. It might be helpful for me to go into the roots and to see where that came from in order that I can start to dismantle it and its roots. But whether or not I go that route, some people that works for, some people not. Right? The fact that I have that, that I like to win, right? I should notice myself, right? Especially with a person's with his wife. Right, that he has to give in. When you're with your friends or your chavruta and you're arguing, you don't have to give in. Argue till the end. I don't care what you're saying. I'm not giving up my. But when it's with his wife, so for Shalom Bayit, you need to give in, even if you know you're right or you think you are, right? And so, which is why Rabbi writes in Ganah Shalom that being married is the greatest. Test and the greatest benefit for a person's midot. Because there are things that you have to do, like giving in, working on this nitzachon. When your wife argues against you, even though you're 100% sure she's wrong, you have to smile and say, "You're right, you're right."
So, when you're talking with a child,
yeah,
you know, usually children's parents see things differently. You're trying to help your child, and your child is rejecting it.
That's so, normal, yeah.
And if you say, okay, just do it your way, you know, find out for yourself, breathing that way might be destructive or might be hurtful, and you're trying to prevent that. You're saying that the best thing to do is to step away, let the person take over the responsibility for whatever path that is, and which way they will go, and what's going to happen.
No, I'm not saying that.
No. What do you see?
Let's take an example. The problem with Nitzachon is that I refuse to hear the truth. I'm looking to win. It's perfectly acceptable to win an argument. There's nothing wrong with winning an argument if I'm holding by the truth. But it's very bad to win an argument where I'm not holding by the truth, but I manage to win it through other means. Right? Let's say, for example, I'm a lawyer. Right? And I know very well stuff that this guy doesn't know on the other side of the deal. I can win a point through means, and I can get my client off the hook or whatever. It's not good. But if I know an argument that is good and is valid, then I need to give it. If I'm learning with my Chavruta Gemara, and I think I understand this sugya, and I'm trying to tell him, because he doesn't understand what's going on, and I do understand, and I argue, and at some point in the argument, it becomes clear to me as I'm talking that I'm actually talking nonsense. This doesn't work at all. I've just seen the error in my argument. Is I've got to drop it completely, even though I'm just about to convince him. Because winning that argument is pointless. I had to win that on the basis of a lie. So, arguing and winning the argument, finding the truth, is great. It's what we're here for. It depends on the circumstance. With your wife and with your children, something else going on. You're not trying to find the truth. You're trying to find Hashem's truth. So if your wife tells you, you never buy me anything, Hashem's truth is to say, you're right, dear, I don't, I'm really sorry. Even though it's not true, even though, classically speaking, according to the laws of logic, it's not true, and you don't have to give in, and you can stand your ground and say, that's not true. Because that's not what I'm here for. I'm not here to win that argument. With my kids, it depends what actually is going on. It depends on the... Sometimes it's appropriate to let them make their own mistakes. Sometimes it's not so appropriate to let them make their mistakes if it's really dangerous and can really hurt them. A lot of mistakes are not so dangerous. And, right? I wouldn't wear that top if I were you. Oh, so she went, because it's a, not because it's not sniff, right? Because it's like a not nice coat. You don't have to tell your kid, I don't like that. I'd change. That's not that, that's fine. They want to go out looking like a Jaffa orange. They can go out looking like a Jaffa orange, right? That's their taste. So, and they'll realize, or whatever. So that's, I don't have to impose my will, even though I think I know better. I it depends on what it is. But we're working here to work on ourselves, right? This is a book, this is a self-improvement and self-growth book. How do I work on myself? So I have to know that I'm not going to be able to work on myself if I don't recognize the traits of Nitzachon and try and do what I can to avoid it or reduce it, to be aware of it, to pray, if it's really bad, to pray that Hashem takes it away. A person like this that wants always to be right, his main thing, his main ikkar, is that he needs to succeed. He's not able to stand the truth. The truth gets in the way. Truth gets in the way of succeeding and of being right. Because a person is never right all the time. Dafka Hashem makes it that I'm not going to be right. If I can't accept being wrong and making a mistake, then I'm really stuffed. Because that's the way of the world. It can't be right 24/7. It can't be. I'm not in control. Hashem is going to make my life such that more or less I'm going to be right and wrong all day long. If I can't accept being wrong, then my lies have to get bigger and bigger in order to cover that. And unfortunately, there are people like that, who live with that difficulty that they can't accept being wrong. Why? Because when they were a kid and they were 6 years old and they got something wrong, they got beaten up. Or whatever it is. Emotionally, physically, whatever happened, right? Then they can't stand the feeling of being wrong. Can't admit, right? And it expresses itself in many different ways. People won't ask questions in class, in shul, because they don't want to look like they got something wrong. Like, I didn't understand. Right? And the Gemara says a person who can't ask questions can never learn. So we have this in us. And we have to realize that we have it in us, and it's negative, and it's a Yetzer Hara, and it's damaging for us. And our best position is to accept being wrong.
You know, I'm hearing this as, you know, I need to be right from my perspective. However, if I want to flip it around and really try to understand your perspective, then I say, you know what? I'm not right according to your perspective. With the wife, you know, you said previously, I don't buy you anything. Well, objectively, you do. But subjectively, from her point of view, as you had mentioned in the past, you don't buy anything for me. It's all for you, a secondary gain, whatever. So from her perspective, that's she's correct. And she is correct. I am not correct. And even though from my point of view, I am correct.
But it
from
could,
her point of
right.
view, I'm not.
So in that situation, in your point of view, you're still correct. But there are many situations where, from my point of view, I'm not correct. It's not a perspective thing. It's just simply I got it wrong.
But couldn't you also say that it's not that we're taking it too literally in the sense that what the person's saying to us, we never buy something, we never do this, we never turn up for class, we never do these things. It's not that you're never buying, you're never turning up to class, you're never doing the said behavior. It's just a way of trying to emphasize that, hey, the next time you make sure, you know, it's exaggerating so that the person will respond. Because if you say,
right.
this
so,
time...
But what happens, because Hashem gives us that exaggeration, and then that the exaggeration gives us free will to either argue against it, because I've now got an opening the size of a house to demolish that argument, because it's the exaggeration is the bit that I can just tear apart. Right? It's not true. Or Hashem gives you the free will to accept. You're right. You're talking. You're very much exaggerated, but it's truth in what you're saying. To fight to admit there's truth in what you're saying. It's not going to be presented. I'm not married to a lawyer who's going to present her case in clauses. On this day, you're right. This and it's going to be bulletproof, and you can't. Right. It's gonna. Hashem gives us free choice, which means that what comes over to us. Is a mangled mess of truth and lies and exaggeration and emotion, but there is truth in it, and it, to be inverted commas big enough to accept the truth, to accept the criticism, to accept the constructive advice that Hashem is trying to tell me within that.
About let's say your wife comes and say never you buy ever. To me. You say, because maybe when you look very deep inside, you vote for yourself.
Okay.
You don't want anything good in
right.
your eyes.
So the it's truth, but nitzachon means that I'm stuck.
So are you going to stop, think, and take the time to realize that something inside has to change? And you need to look at what's going on, because it's an alarm bell that's going off. And sooner or later, that alarm bell is going to get louder and louder and louder.
If it does go off, if I recognize it, because if let's say we now have this conversation, you know, you were never in this class. If I never read, if I never read, this wouldn't be on my radar necessarily. As an issue that I really need to deal with. I've got bigger things to deal with than this. But Rabbi Isaac is flagging it up as an issue that we wouldn't have thought about necessarily. But it's actually a very big issue in personal growth. A person needs to be able to be wrong in order to grow, to accept that I'm wrong, that I need to change. As a fundamental principle of self-growth. I don't have that fundamental building block, then there's nothing to build. I'm stuck. Because I'm going to justify everything according to my own perspective, my own outlook. Everything I hear, I'm going to filter through my own justification machine. That doesn't affect me, that doesn't apply to me, that one I fixed. Right? Nothing is going to move me.
That's why I was mentioning the alarm clock going off.
Why?
Because you get warning signs or some kind of something that's going on, and if you don't pay attention to it, you're going to get the same thing over and over and over again, because you need to stop and think and look.
You're right. It's
very hard.
Hashem has to wake us up.
Yeah.
When a person's... Offer areas, I was at his shul last night, he explained that a person who was in Astir, what's hiddenness? If Hashem is hidden from you, what does that mean? It means that you fell from where you were. You know God's in the world and you fell. So you know you've fallen and you know you need to get back to where you were. Right? But Hashem right now is hidden from you. So it's difficult to get back. That's one level of hiddenness. But the second level of hiddenness is you don't even realize that it's hidden from you. Because you think everything's great. I'm living my life, clubbing, partying, surfing, right? And it's so hidden that I don't even know it's hidden. I haven't even got the understanding that it's hidden from me. That's hidden within the hidden. So he asked the question, he said, person who's hidden within the hidden, how can he ever get out of that? He doesn't know that he's, right, that he's stuck in order to get out. Person who's got one level of hiddenness knows that he's, for the second level, he can never get out, because there's no starting point for ever beginning to ask the question. So he says that the answer Rabbeinu gives in Luktei Moran is that it comes from the Sadiqim. Sadiqim wake us up. He gave a story. He said a guy came to him after one of his shirim and said to him, "I'm about to shuvah. I've been about to shuvah now for a year, whole year." And he said, "Why? How did I become about to shuvah?" So I was born in a chiloni family, legamre, completely secular. We decided to go, me and four friends, to go to Eilat for a 5 days holiday. On the way down on the drive, we're driving through the desert, you know, the big road down, right? And I turned to my friends out of the blue and said to them, "So where is Mount Sinai meant to be? Is it meant to be here somewhere? And when did we get the Torah? Where was that meant to be?" I started asking all these questions, and I said to him, "What are you talking about?" Like, they're all talking nonsense, sharp. So they shut me up for 5 minutes, and I was quiet. And then like 10 minutes later, I started saying again, "Yeah, but where is it? It must be here somewhere. If we can make..." And I started asking all these questions. Then, "Shut, what are you on? Did you eat something? Did you drink it right? What are you asking?" And so he got to Eilat. He was on the beach. He saw a couple of Breslov Hasidim doing Hafetzah. He ran over to them and said, "What's with this Mount Sinai thing? Where is it meant to be?" They started asking all these questions. I thought that was a year ago and he made complete tshuva. But he said he came to the Rav at the end of his shiur to say, "But I have one question, Rav. How was it that out of nothing I started asking these questions? Like, it's completely not on my radar to even ask. Right? I'm there on the trip down to... We're going to party for 5 days in Eilat. I'm not even... Who would have been completely..." So Rav Eretz explained that the Mesirat Nefes of Sadiqim is what causes a person who's very far away from Hashem to have thoughts of teshuva. So he explains in further detail why and how and whatever, but the similar point here: if I don't know I've got this bad trait, am I ever going to wake up from it? The truth is, Hashem does give us opportunities. A person who wants to work on himself, Hashem gives them the opportunity. Right? The way a person wants to go, he leads him. That's why everybody who is here is sitting in the class, because they want to work on themselves. So Hashem is giving them the opportunity. They gave him this book, they gave him the shiur, they gave him put Chut Shel Chesed in your face. Right? So that's the answer as to how I know to wake up and what I know to wake up with.
That's a good way to look at this. It's Parsha, the hidden within the hidden. The whole Parsha is about that. The hidden within the hidden. And you know what isn't revealed to us in the snap of a finger. The hidden within the hidden, we have to react to whatever that situation is. So we have it all working. It's just working.
Right. Todd, thank you, gentlemen. Until tomorrow.
But tomorrow, Jim, is.